Have you been overcome with an irresistible urge to wash your potato? Are you looking out at this world and going, what in the heck is really going on? Well, you've ended up right here at the 100th Monkey Radio with Tom and Ramon, and we'll see if we can't pull a couple of pieces out of this mosaic of life and try to figure them out as we're going. So, God, we got a lot of things going on, guys. Our lineup for the next month looks really good. We've got some pretty interesting shows coming up. We've got George Kavassalis coming back to the show. And we've got, who in the hell else, Ramon? We've got...
Don't forget we have Paul Levy.
And then we're gonna do a special two-hour live show on... The 20th, which is our 1 year anniversary. Yay!
Well, actually, the 17th is our 1 year anniversary, but it doesn't fall on the 17th this year, so we're doing it on the 20th.
Close enough, though. So yeah, we're actually kind of going, wow, this year went by really fast.
Really fast.
Yeah,
that is very true.
Here we are. This is our 51st show, and it just doesn't seem like it's been a year, but wow, what we've experienced and gone through in the last year has been absolutely amazing, just for Ramon and I, as far as the growth and the different experiences that we've personally had. So yeah, we'll be sharing that on that show and asking everybody to call in, and we'll do some recap on all of the different guests that we've had on. And yeah, it should be a good show, good time. So also with membership section, guys, if you want that second hour content, click that member button and join us. Help support the work that Ramon and I are doing. We put our heart and souls into this, so thank you. So who we got tonight, Ramon?
Tonight we have Amari Magdalena. Of Eurasian heritage, Mongolian, Slavic, Celtic, it was no accident that Amari Magdalena was called to the shamanic path. Since early childhood, Magdalena was drawn to the world of mysticism, spiritually, and the paranormal. Metaphysicians, psychics, and healers were woven throughout the deep background of her family's history. Years of domestication moved Magdalena away from the intended path into the mid-1980s, when a near-death experience reawakened her to the destined service. In 1990, Amari Magdalena was drawn to relocate from the Pacific Northwest to New Mexico. Already well along the path of the spiritual rediscovery, Amari had been experiencing an increase in paranormal and psychic phenomena. Upon arriving in New Mexico, mystical and metaphysical exposure increased exponentially. Spirit presented four shamanic teachers, mentors to her, who were involved in diverse aspects of earth-based spirituality. She was also gifted contact with spiritual guides who direct her studies. In her exposure to Toltec, Celtic, Native American, Curandismo, and the Peruvian shamanism, Amari Magdalena came full circle in her own ceremonial wheel and moved into the role of Inagua. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Sorry for chopping up your bio there.
That's okay. Sometimes it's hard to pronounce those words. Corondurismo is the word.
I got confused because we say it different. We say curandero.
Curandero, well, that would be the male. And the curandera is the female. And corondurismo is that study, that body of work, of healing work.
Yeah, but even then we... Like in Dominican Republic, we never say curanderismo. We always say curandero if we're talking about the actual
right.
practice. Yeah. Anyway. So, before we get into the book, I wanted to ask you, did you ever meet Jeannie Gentry?
Yes, yes. Jeannie was Don Miguel's business manager when I studied with him. So we know each other from way back in the 90s.
So. Oh, nice.
Yeah.
She was actually one of our first guests, but...
in the third month, I think, something like that.
Right, yeah. Nice lady. Good energy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The sweetheart.
Amazing book. So let's start with your near-death experience, if that's okay.
Sure. basically, it was in one of the... I've had a few major surgeries, and it was during one of the major surgeries, and I had that traditional NDE experience of going through the tunnel, coming out into the light, and seeing many, many of the people from my family that were on the other side. And as with other people that have experienced that, you begin to get a sense that there's something more than just the concrete... world that you've observed, and I think it just awakened me to a need to start more earnestly getting on some sort of spiritual path, and that's what happened in the 80s. So at first I started studying different, more, well, somewhat traditional religions, but then I started studying some other bodies of work involving Tibetan Buddhism, aspects of core Christianity, more the words of Jesus of Nazareth, not the church-type related things. And and at that point, I started having some visitations of energy. And that kind of just grew exponentially when I got called to move to New Mexico. Everything that occurred to get me there was very magical, and it was the first time in my life I'd ever decided to make a move that wasn't related to a father's work that was caused relocation or a husband's work. And literally, a friend of mine and I drove across to New Mexico in a U-Haul van taking all my belongings. There were snowstorms everywhere around us except on the road we were on. And I mean, virtually the sides of the road were snowstorms, but there was this open corridor, and it was the beginning of an amazing corridor of magic that whatever I chose to manifest, I did. And it was quite amazing. It was trusting spirit to provide rather than trying to manipulate and arrange my life.
And you at this point, you had consciously... put your trust in spirit to guide you?
Yes, I had. I felt called to come to New Mexico at that time, or to go to New Mexico at that time. And I'd always loved the Southwest, but hadn't decided I wanted to live there. But something called me, and it was amazing. And I hate to use all these silly adjectives that don't have a whole lot of meaning, but truly, the things that occurred for the 3 years, the first time I was there, were in the arena of phenomenal. And it's hard to even language or articulate everything that happened. But I was a left-brained accountant at the time, so that may give you an idea of my mindset.
Right.
Okay, although I was open to new possibilities and was experiencing some of that There was a lot of left brain detritus that I had to move over, step over. And the phenomenon that happened pushed me over the edge of my known reality to something that turned out to work a whole lot better in my life.
I can definitely relate to the phenomena pushing you over the edge. My awakening process was one of those, where Spirit's saying, look at this, you can't deny it. And then when I turned my head away, it slapped me upside the head with a 2x4 and say, no, I said, look at this. So I went kicking and screaming the whole way myself, but no, I don't want to wake up.
I know.
What is it in your own point of view? Because I've heard so many people say, I was called to New Mexico. I almost feel like New Mexico is becoming kind of like, I don't know what word to use, but like a magical mecca.
Well,
magic
I think
mecca or something.
Certainly in the 90s it was. I don't know that it is so much today, although there seemed to be like a corridor of transference of people moving around, and it's still a place people are drawn to. But it was my birthday in 1989.
Happy belated birthday.
Well, no, it's November 4th. On my birthday in 1989, a friend shoved a plane ticket to New Mexico in my hand. I was not thinking of living there, but most of my house is decorated when I was living in Seattle, Washington, as if I were living in the Southwest. And so my friend said, go there. And I did. And at first I thought I would live in Santa Fe, but that time around I lived in Los Ranchos de Albuquerque. And there was something about it that was so compelling that when I went home back to Washington State, I just announced to everyone, I'm leaving. And on March 8th, International Women's Day in 1990, my late friend Jonelle and I got in the car and drove to New Mexico. and it was as if you're being pulled there. There's something very strong at that time about the energy that kind of transported. And then as I got there, you know, everyone said, oh, it will be really hard to find housing that's in a safe area that you'll like, and it'll be hard to find a job that pays anywhere near what you're used to. And none of that was true. I found an absolutely fabulous casita. I had a very well-paying job in less than 30 days. And whatever was needed was absolutely met and more than I expected. So I knew that something was at play.
So when you really get out of the way and allow the universe or spirit to actually present these things to you, it takes care of everything, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. And even down to the job that I located was kind of a bizarre little controllership out in Bernalillo, which is outside of Albuquerque. And the woman who owned it was a bark manufacturing plant, if you can imagine. And the woman who owned it was involved with a psychic from Albuquerque. And that was the beginning of just, you know, kind of walking into circles that people were inviting me to join with no, you know, prior intention to do that, or I wasn't seeking it. It was just there. And that began part of the whole crazy paranormal corridor that I walked into. And even when I met Miguel, I wasn't intending to study shamanism. It wasn't in my mind to do that. And my late friend Elena Avila, who's a famous curandera, she invited me to a party in Santa Fe, and I think that was the next year after I moved there. And when I met Miguel, he just looked at me and said, you will study with me. And my response was, oh, really? Like, who are you and do I want to know about you? And then I went to a few meetings. I commuted for a long time between Albuquerque and Santa Fe. And after I went to a few meetings, he walked up to me and said, you will apprentice with me. And again, it was, oh, really? But, you know, there were several occurrences like that, just the synchronicity of meeting people, of connecting with people. I sponsored a circle for a while in Albuquerque. I ran into a woman, and we were sharing our paranormal stories, and she said, I bet there's a whole bunch of people that are afraid to even tell others about what's happening to them. And so we kind of put out the word, and 50 people showed up in her living room the first night sharing their phenomenal stories in a safe
environment. Oh my. Wow.
So it was quite an adventure there.
Wow. Can we go into some of the quote-unquote paranormal?
Sure. I know that most of your listeners are open to this. If it were another venue, I might be more more hesitant.
You can go as far out as you want.
I know. Well, it started when I was working with a psychic in Albuquerque, and I think one of the things that happens, and I know this has happened for my students working with me, and for me working with other, you know, guides, is that the guide or teacher holds an energy or space for you to step into. And if you're open at all to possibilities, just being held in that energy will begin to activate you. And so as I started working with Aurora, that was the lady's name, I started having spontaneous past life remembrances. I would be driving down the highway or sitting in a outdoor concert, and all of a sudden a TV screen would pop up in front of me in full color of a lifetime that I'd had before.
Wow.
Which was pretty amazing. And then I started, my electromagnetic field changed radically. So if I touched a computer, it went out. Fortunately, I had a boss at the time whose only comment the first time I put out the computers was, "You have a very strong electromagnetic field." I just said,
"Oh
yeah.
Wow,
yeah.
That's really cool."
And then I started putting out lights. If I walked down the street, all the street lights went out. You know, if I hit a light switch and wasn't being consciously in my body, it would put the lights out. My mother used to hate to have me come and visit her because if I touched a faucet, it would drip. And it was just, this energy was cursing through me. And it was having quite an impact. I had one odd experience of, I had a watch that the battery ran down and it was dead. And I saw a native-made watch band that I liked in a store. And I said, oh, well, you know, can you put this watch on it? Because it had been on a metal band. And she did. And just for fun, I set it, even though it had been dead for a long time. And it started running. And it ran all day. I took it off at night. It stopped running. Got up in the morning, set it, put it on. It ran. When I took it off, it stopped. So I finally recognized that it was running on my energy.
Wow.
And that was pretty phenomenal. And then one of the most impactful things that happened, and I think that was about a year into being in New Mexico, I suddenly had a visitation of entities. That's the only way I can describe it. And for
off,
about
off where or other dimensionally, or you're not even sure?
I'm not sure. I know that there were 12 of them, and they worked with me at night. And at first it was shocking, because I was very aware that when I went to bed at night and it was dark, that 12 energies would enter the room, and you could feel them sitting down on the bed one at a time on each side of me. And at first, as I said, it's very unsettling if you're not prepared for it. I got to the point where I would talk to them, but I didn't want to see them. I thought it might freak me out. And what happened is that they began to download information into me about metaphysics and take me on journeys. And I can't tell you where, Tom or Ramon. I have no idea. I don't know if it was other worlds. I know I lost a lot of sleep for a period of time. But I suddenly had amazing answers to questions of things I've not studied. And They were very gentle with me. If I told them I absolutely had to sleep, they would leave me alone for a night. But they were my constant nighttime companions for almost 2 years. And as I've told students, if that type of thing should happen to you, it's amazing, but don't get too attached to it because they're there for a reason. They're there for your learning, and they're not your constant companions. And when they're ready to go, you have to let them go.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but it was quite an experience. They used to do something that was so soothing at the end of the night. They would all put their hands under me and rock me back to sleep for a couple hours before I had to get up.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to tell most people that, they would think I was a little bit crazy. but it actually happened. And what can I say? You know, some of us have experiences like that that others couldn't relate to unless it happened. And I do know that I've talked with other more left brain people, and it seems like sometimes that is more prone to happen to someone who's truly left brained and needs to just get shocked out of their limited consciousness than perhaps some people that are more right brained and are open, but they're open enough that they're going to get it, whatever it is, without being pushed or kind of shoved over that edge.
Okay,
guys, we called the Mariana landline. We were having that little bit of feedback issue, so we are back, Mary. If you want to go ahead and pick up where you were there.
Oh, sure. We were talking about the entities, and another thing that happened was that I started calling animals. I mean, animals were drawn to me, and I'd never been much of an animal person before, but horses in particular. And I lived in a very rural part of Albuquerque, and I would walk down a dirt road. And if there were any horses anywhere in the vicinity, they would race to the fence and winnow until I came over and put my hand on their face, on their nose, and kind of communed with them. And this happened no matter where I was. I was up in Taos one time, and I heard a horse, you know, just calling and calling, and actually climbed through the brush to get up there and touch this horse. And then it was quiet, and it was strange to me because I had not been a major animal lover, but something in my energy field must have changed a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And animals just started showing up all over the place. And I still, to this day, seem to generally attract an animal menagerie.
Wow.
So was that before the group started working with you, or after?
That was during the time they were working with me. It just so many things happened. If I was with someone that was on a similar thread of consciousness, and we were talking, they would begin to look like paper cutouts on a Hollywood backdrop instead of real people. I would take a walk somewhere, and I would enter what I called no time. Everything would suspend. And it would be, you know, whoever was with me would have a very magical experience. So that's when I began to also get that sense that the construct of time and space are illusions. So a lot of my consciousness just over that period of 3 years when I was in New Mexico the first time was radically altered, and I felt like I had crossed a bridge of no return, and that, you know, that it was good. It was scary, but good. So.
So at what point did you begin studying with Don Miguel?
Probably the second year into being in New Mexico, somewhere in the second year, or maybe the end of the first year. I'm trying to kind of track it all now in my mind. It's been a long time. I don't know if I'd met the Celtic and Cherokee shamans in the valley yet or not. I think I met Miguel first, and then I met them, and then Miguel's mother was a very famous curandera. And I studied with her, and then Elena, my friend, who is also very well known in the curandero community. I went to several of her ceremonies, and whatever I was exposed to in those 3 years was just created a radical awakening and a complete shift of consciousness, of intention, of attention, everything.
So Don Miguel's curanderismo is more Mexican or Central American based?
Well, I would say that his mother was more Mexican, I think, in her practice of curanderismo. Elena was more Azteca in her interpretation, and then I've seen other shaman and curanderos from South America that they all have a little bit different slant. So I think theirs was more Mexican because it was also really tied to Catholicism.
Yeah.
And other ones I've seen haven't been so tied to that.
Right.
And what's been fascinating to me is that, in fact, I was recently doing an egg cleansing, an Olympia, on a lady from Russia. And when I did it, because she didn't know what I was going to do when she came to see me, she said, "Oh, that's what the old women do in Russia."
Oh.
And I said, yes, my aunts were practitioners of the old ways, but they didn't tell anybody about it because, remember, so many people were trying to Americanize as quickly as they could, and they didn't necessarily share their old ways with people outside of their community. So what we say curanderos or curanderas practice in this country is not new, just as Native American shamanism is not new. There have been shamanic practices all over the world, you know, since time out of mind.
With the egg cleansing, when I was young, I remember seeing the woman who used to babysit me was from Mexico, and she was doing it on my sister, and it just popped. And I knew the pop wasn't from her squeezing it. It was like it wasn't a pop from when you squeeze something kind of pop. It was more like it was overheated. That's what it looked like. Like the pressure inside it had built up from whatever my sister had that she was cleansing off.
Oh, she was releasing. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So I find it really amazing that a lot of these practices and even the actual steps that go into all the different ceremonies throughout all the world, the similarities between them are striking.
Absolutely.
It's like this is the way this is done. And you know, I mean, this is the way that the spirit interacts or spirit responds very well to this pattern, to this method.
Right.
I just find it amazing that these totally isolated cultures have developed the exact same, basically the exact same formulas.
Right. That is amazing. And in the book, I do talk about a basic kind of essential medicine wheel, so people can understand it, sort of devoid of a specific cultural attachment, but throughout the world, there are similarities in how the medicine wheel is encountered, interacted with, revered, and how that concept of circles came about. And you have to know that there is a consciousness that's being communicated and transmitted even when people are at great distances from one another. But another thought is that as you look at our current map of Earth, it's almost like a great puzzle. And if you put the pieces together, I mean, I kind of feel like there was one landmass at one time and that it burst apart with different, you know, phenomenon and different Earth changes. So perhaps it isn't so strange that there would be similarities because probably in the beginning, there was that reverence and that attention to circle and ceremony, and people took it with them.
Do you
buy into the belief where they were taught by the sky people?
Yeah,
Because like certain tribes in Central America would say, oh, those are our creators.
Right. I know a lot has been written about that, and Zachariah Strichen wrote quite a bit about that, and Genesis Revisited in some of his other books. I think it's possible. I mean, as I would say, it's possible that there's life on other planets. It's hard to believe. As they said in the movie Contact, there's an awful lot of space out there, and it's wasted if there's no other life forms. Yeah, so, you know, there are a lot of theories floating around, and I think you take each of those for yourself and what it means to you. If you connect with it, great. And certainly there are many people walking around on the Earth right now that are more otherworldly than more earthbound. And even Native people talk about someone whose energy is more skyward or someone whose energy is more earthward. And we could say that that person whose energy is more skyward may have been influenced, their genetics influenced by something beyond our known and explainable form we call Earth.
Hmm. So I really, I pretty much got through your whole book. And
you did, okay.
Yes, I did. I got all the way back to the, I think it's actually is the last chapter. So, yeah, the additional tools is where I got it. Got to. So, I actually was very impressed with the detail that you broke each one of the shields down into, as far as explaining their form and function. Would you give give our audience a brief overview of what you were trying to accomplish with this book and what the book itself teaches?
Yes, not a problem at all. I was introduced to this concept in a very small reading several years ago, and it made sense to me. And it is that we each have a tribal medicine wheel, and we have a personal medicine wheel. And whereas we have four cardinal directions in the medicine wheel, we say that we have four inner personalities in our own personal medicine wheel. And these personalities can govern our degree of happiness or unhappiness. And for most people, the known personas are their current adult, the gender of their current adult, and the gender of their child. And we call those the tonal shields, those shields that are on that meridian of north to south, which we call the tonal or ordinary reality. And the parts that aren't so known to many people are the Nagua shields, which are on that meridian of the extraordinary reality. And they are the east and west shields, which represent our opposite gender adult and our opposite gender child. And the idea is that in learning more about the unknown shields and in healing the known shields, that we begin to create kind of a family within that can support us through life in a way that we perhaps projected onto other people, hoping that they would make us better, make us happier, do something for us. And I call that creating compensatory relationships rather than complementary relationships. And the idea of the book is to give the reader tools to come full circle within their own circle, to heal the issues that are disparate in their tonal shields, to introduce the magic of the Nagua shields, and to begin to feel more whole, so that when you enter a relationship, whether it's a working relationship or a romantic relationship, you're not projecting a bag of needs onto someone else that they can't possibly meet in their entirety. Rather, you're looking for situations and people that are just, they enhance what you already have. And I feel that just watching the students over the years that have gone through my classes, this was the work that helped them heal the most, and that's what they all said. It helped them get over fear of success. You know, it helped them quit being so judgmental. It helped them get out of victim mode. So that's kind of the core idea of the book. It's a book about transforming yourself. And I named it Beyond the Four Agreements because I discovered over time that there was quite a corollary between the four agreements and these four inner shields. And whereas the original four agreements are about agreements that in our mind set us up for what we call heaven or hell. And this book is about some actions that can transform our understanding so that we are then able to work with the agreements. And I point that out in the book, that when Miguel talked about not taking things personally, a wounded self shield, which is the inner shield of your current gender child, is always going to take things personally. And so when you heal that energy, then you're able to detach from taking things personally. And it helps you move and accelerate your life in quite a profound way. So does that begin to answer some of what you're asking?
Oh, well, absolutely, absolutely. You know, I see that beginning of this, I like the right out of the gates, you laid out how to cast your own medicine wheel. That right off the bat really intrigued me. When you start going into the different directions and understanding the things that each direction, the properties each direction possesses, and the parts of your life that they address, and I just see this format can be an absolutely wonderful tool for somebody who is beginning to wake up and needs some structured format to help them work through things. I mean, because it can get pretty chaotic if you don't have something that will help ground you and give you some kind of a direction on how to work through these changes that we're going through right now.
Right, absolutely. And I think it's very timely in that regard, that there are a lot of people waking up and wanting difference and wanting to make a change. And yet they're often sort of disenfranchised from their tribe, their group, their family, or a more organized platform like a religion or specific spiritual practice. And I think that in introducing the way I did, the medicine wheel, it makes it accessible for almost anyone to embrace without too much attention to, you know, whether they're pledging allegiance to a particular body of thought that, you know, doesn't align with them. But I think in these times to begin to understand how we can get into a movement of flow within our own circle and within the outer circles and within our planet is really important, because in times of chaos, we have to find that way to be that calm at the center of the storm. And ritual and ceremony and the medicine wheel and the shields are a wonderful way to get very grounded so that you are at peace no matter what happens, because things are moving so rapidly now. Like you were talking about the year going by of your radio show, it's like things are flashing by in hyperspeed. And so having that core grounding is, as you say, very, very helpful and important, and it gives you a sense of peace.
Yes. It's okay. Well, let's we have enough time in the first hour here, I think, to touch on all four of the shields a little bit, and maybe if you would share some of the different attributes and areas that each one of these, the different shields, as you term them, or the different cardinal points, the directions, what their attributes and et cetera. Spit it out. Come on. So let's start with south.
Okay, because that's where I like to begin.
Exactly.
The south shield, the south direction of our medicine wheel. Ultimately, in the medicine wheel, the south is the place of innocence, and that's a very good quality for us to have, because it allows us to try new things. It allows us to believe in magic. It allows us to grow and to develop trust, which you do as a little child or not, and to love. And part of working with the soft shield is, in my mind, is healing some of the wounds of the childhood and beginning to actually love yourself. And I mean not just the A-list, not the all the things you're good at, the let's put down everything that I love about myself, but all the aspects of ourselves so we can heal. And in the South, the types of energies that we're dealing with in terms of the medicine wheel, you know, we look at the mineral world, and in, I believe it's one of the Plains traditions, in the mineral world, they look at rose quartz and lepidolite and fluorite as stones that bring a certain healing energy, and they say that in those directions that growth, trust, and love are the attributes, the things that we're working to heal or to make more, you know, manifest in our lives. And this is the direction that we head in after birth. We could say that when we come in through the birth canal, we enter in the east because we come in on the light as we leave. We descend into the light as we ascend into the light when we leave. And then we move to the south, to the childhood. And so much of what our impressions of the world are formed during that childhood. So this is a very critical shield to our happiness, to our ultimate happiness. And that's why I begin in that direction, because I feel it's foundational to healing your own medicine wheel by beginning to understand what happened, where the wounds were, how you can heal them. And in each of those chapters, I give you many, many tools for healing them and journeying to begin to uncover the type of shield that you'd like to have. So the South is a very critical point. And when we talk about its relationship to the North, this is the corridor, that tonal area, where we tend to play judge and victim to ourselves until that's healed. And the beauty of doing this work is that when that's healed, that corridor begins to run smoothly by converting that critical inner parent to what I call the benevolent parent, and the wounded, victimized child into that really important part of us that learns how to express emotion, that doesn't suppress it, that doesn't rage with it, but learns to appropriately express emotion. So there's a lot of energy in dealing with your shields that begins in the South and identifying how that South shield is perhaps interfering in your life in terms of if you're not able to move forward in your life, if you have a fear of success, if you're very fear-based or fear-bound. A lot of that came out of trust that was broken in the childhood.
Right.
So because I chose to make this book to use a lot of the principles of shamanism, whereas the Four Agreements, you know, talks about the agreements, but it doesn't really touch on the shamanic aspects of it. I chose to come out of the closet and just say, this is what I do, you know, and these are the tools that help you work. And so we talk about the totem world with each of the shields. So we talk about the animal totems, the plant totems, the mineral totems, and the human totems that can help you begin to flesh this out. And then with each of the shields, I also talk about symptoms of the shield being out of balance or in balance so that people can kind of monitor. You know, reading these words, they can begin to see, maybe that applies, maybe that's what's happening. And I would just say, I'm telling everyone that globally, I see more wounded South shields than you could ever imagine. I think it's part of our cultural setups and the type of world that we're living in. But there's a lot of wounding of the South, so that's a very good place to begin to work with that. And then I have this move to the West because I want us to begin to uncover one of the opposite gender shields. And for many adults who've been, like myself and many others, trying to find that perfect other half or that perfect other mate and not found great success, by introducing the West and the first Nagual shield, you begin to open up a corridor that takes you through the illusion to truth. And that truth then begins to be an intuitive knowing that you have about when to move and when not to move, how to be guided through your life. And you begin to actually, I call it dancing that soulmate awake, because that soulmate isn't really, in my mind, out there somewhere. What we're looking for is really something that we can develop within. And you begin to dance that shield awake. And that shield's role, ultimately, in your medicine wheel, will begin to partner with the North Shield to help affect a lot of healing of the North Shield by providing support. But it's interesting for women to understand that their intuition comes from their male shield, because men always say women's intuition, and yet for the woman, the intuitive, the knowing side comes from the male part of her circle. And so in the West, we're talking about completions, we're talking about those things for which we're grateful, we're talking about the kinds of lessons that are presented in our life and how we handle those lessons. Are we able to look at them objectively? Are we able to understand the learning of the experience, to go inside? And are we able to pick ourselves up and gather some strength to go on to the next learning experience? And so that's a little bit about the West, how we journey to find that West Shield. And I have people really work a lot with identifying their opposite gender adult to the extent of dressing the part of that shield. Mm. Ultimately, in the book, you marry that shield, and that's been really easy for women to do, but not always so easy for men to do. But it's such great fun when I've gotten male students to dress their female, and they've really gotten into it. They've had a good time. But it's an important learning, because it sort of demystifies that opposite gender. And I think also in recent times, since the 70s, probably the second or third women's movement, a lot of women like myself really took on a heavy masculine shield. We tried to be the best men we knew how to be, and we modeled it after what we were seeing of male behavior. And that was not the divine male, that was the culturally created male.
Right.
And so this, the West Shield, is about finding the innate qualities of your opposite gender, those things that are complementary to you. It isn't about identifying what your culture thinks is male or female, but how you relate to it and what complementary things that persona, as you get to know them, can bring into your life. So that's kind of, we go to that West Shield next, and then we go to the North Shield to finish up the tonal shields, and there we're dealing with the ancestral wisdom, and we're dealing with the judge, the perennial judge. And I do a really fun workshop where I have five people play in a little drama with me. And the drama is a courtroom drama of the judge attacking the South Shield as the victim. And it's really fun because people begin to get it. They begin to hear the dialogue. And I took it right out of my own life, so it makes it very fun for me. So, I don't know if my family would enjoy it as much as I do. But but I do. And so in the North, you're trying to look at why did the North Shield take on this heavy mantle of responsibility, and why has that North Shield tightened up, lost their sense of humor, began to criticize and judge? What part of that persona has become so fractured that it's actually harming a part of your inner wheel, which is your South Shield? And some of the aspects in more native tradition is that that's a corridor of cleansing, purification, and renewal. And it's also the corridor where we connect with the ancestors. In circles with curanderas, they call out to the ancestors in that direction when they're calling in. And you'll hear them, abuelita, abuelito, and they're inviting them to come and share their wisdom. So it's ultimately, it is about wisdom, but we can't be wise if we're busy judging others. So,
exactly.
So as we begin to look at what is the truth of the North Shield, what is our current gender to us, not society, but what does it mean to us? What are the strengths? What are some of the inherent properties of the things that hormones impact? And how is that different for one another? And we also begin to build a partnership and begin to see the West as an agent for helping us, you know, kind of take on the burdens of the adult corridor of our life. And again, we work with a journey. We work with all of the totems. And I like to see the North Shield move into what I call, as I said before, the benevolent parent. And the benevolent parent is the one that handles the situation like this. This is an example I give. Your child has, you've gotten a call from the police, and you've been asked to come down to the station. Your child has been caught shoplifting. And the kid's 13 to 15, somewhere around there.
Uh-oh.
And you go down to the courthouse. Okay, so the benevolent parent, you know, sits down and talks with the kid and says, so tell me what happened. And you allow the child to share the story, including their fear of what happened. Maybe they got handcuffed. Maybe they got slammed to the ground. They were treated harshly. They were scared to death. Maybe they peed their pants, whatever they did in fear. And you listen. And when they get done talking, you say, and what did you learn? And because the child isn't being scolded or castigated, they're frequently going to tell you, that's not something I ever want to do again. That was scary. And you say, yes, it was, and I'm glad you had such a good learning. And that's the end of the conversation, unless they bring it up again and you want to talk about it. Whereas the judge is going to be all over them. You're grounded for years. You can't go out. You have to pay all these people. You have to apologize. You have to be shamed, you know, like the olden days of being in the blocks in the center of town for your crimes. I can't remember what they call those. But so the benevolent parent will help the person begin to be kinder to their South Shield. So that when you're behaving in a way that maybe you consider not your best effort or your best way of behaving, instead of your North Shield attacking and calling you names, the North Shield, when it becomes a better parent, will talk to you just like I just did and say, hey, feels like you're not getting enough attention. Let's talk about that. The North Shield will begin to have a different relationship with the child. Perhaps you weren't soothed enough as a child. So I have you get a doll and make that your soft shield. And I have the adult actually sit in a rocking chair and hold this soft shield doll and talk to the doll and begin to assure the doll that they're the one person that will never, ever leave them. And I think that's very comforting for a lot of people because so many people with a wounded soft shield feel abandoned or felt abandoned. So that's kind of what we do with the North Shield. We respect that the North Shield has an important role in our lives, and that's common sense and wisdom, and that's what we need, some of that in our lives. But and I'm sorry, I've got a cough. Stop in a minute. It'll stop. Anyway, we know we need common sense in our lives, and we need someone that we can lean on, our kind of go-to person, but we don't want to lean so heavily that the person feels the burden and then becomes angry. And so that's part of the work with the North Shield. And then we finish with the East Shield, because the East Shield is the playful child, your opposite gender child, that person who is totally present in the moment, and who experiences joy and bliss and all those great qualities that we'd like to have a little bit more of. And for a lot of people, if their North Shield is really wounded, they haven't a clue how to play.
Right.
They're clueless. They're just play, not a concept that they can grasp. And it's important to learn to play. It's important to learn to play hooky and hang a gone fishing sign on your door and you know, occasionally just escape from responsibility. And that's what the East Shield does for the whole circle, is it keeps it light.
Yeah. I'm sorry to interrupt. How are we doing with time, Tom?
We got about 5 minutes.
Because I want to give you some time to say where we can get the book and stuff like that. And then we can pick up the e-shield from the second hour.
Oh, okay, great. You can get my book through my website. It'll go directly to Amazon.com. But my website is HTTP, Institute for Shamanic Synthesis, long name, .com. And you can click on book, and it will take you right to the book. And it's available in hardcover, softcover, and also as an ebook. You can also order it directly from me if you want me to autograph it, and by just giving me a call or sending me an email at shamanicsynthesis.com. And I have to charge a couple bucks extra for shipping, but to get an autographed copy that way. So,
you've also got a lot of other stuff going on. You do classes and stuff?
Yes, I do. I do classes and I do talks and I sponsor moon ceremonies, and I'm going to be doing an 11-11 ceremony this November 11th. And I also perform weddings. I'm an ordained minister, do healings. And I'm writing another book. Actually, I'm writing 3 books.
Nice.
But,
at the same time? Wow.
Yeah, the next book that's going to come out will be complementary to this one. And the title of that one is Unbecoming Me, The Ultimate Shapeshifter's Journey.
Mm-hmm.
And whereas we end this book with the inner marriage of the four shields, that book kind of takes up where that left off, to talk about a higher union with your essential self and how to begin to give your ego a major retirement party and begin to see through what I call the 7 veils of illusion and finding more truth and even more joy. So you could take this book and do a lot of healing work that will then lead you into a place where you're better capable and wanting to have an even more expanded experience of Earth and feeling heavenly while you're here.
Right. Okay, well, we will continue on with the East Shield in the second hour, and we're going to dig into some of the stuff that she's got coming up, and I think we'll get her views and opinions on the stuff happening around the 11-11-11. I know there's a lot going on all around the world, and I know Ramon and I are both very anticipatory or hopeful or optimistic or something about what's going to happen around that time period. But yeah, so a lot of exciting things coming up in our future. So, and I see this book can be an awesome tool for somebody to toss in their bag to help them through some of the shifting, changing, chaotic and sometimes a little disheartening experiences that we go through, and
right.
Can definitely help you, like we said earlier, get some your feet on the ground, get some good grounding and some good direction in your life. So
yeah.
Okay, guys. Well, thanks for joining us for the first hour here in BBS. Stay tuned for Brooks Agnew coming up next, and then pop on over to the members section and listen to hour two.
Which is www.100thmonkeyradio.com.
Oh, yeah. I always forget that part.
That might be important.
Yeah. condemnation without investigation is the height of ignorance, and we love you guys.
Good night. Get down on my knees and pray that